So this is the session on super life and general meat at the crossroads. And I was at a session earlier today where I think it was mainly focused on group risk insurance, and yet it was very much on the insurance cycle and a concept more prevalent perhaps in general insurance, or people more used to seeing it in general insurance. But perhaps it's there in life insurance, and we're just a bit blind to it. So let me just introduce the speakers, and then we'll get on with the presentation. So Stephen Lee. Stephen is a GI actuary. 2012, he wrote a paper for the GI seminar on tort temperature and the impact on liability claims costs. Recently, he's been working with group life insurers by applying general insurance techniques to model the claims experience. And one observation he made was that while litigation in the liability space has been benign, there were signs it was hot in the group life space. Stephen has been working with insurers to understand the issues and to find a solution to this problem. And the other presenter today is Jeff Atkins. Jeff spent his formative years, at least his formative working years or actuarial years, in superannuation and life insurance. Now that may come as a surprise to many people. I think I'm old enough to remember that. And that was about 30 years ago before taking up general insurance. His first client visit ever was to James Hardy at Asbestos House in York Street, to explain that AMP was taking a bath on its group life and TPD policy. He asks forgiveness for thinking there is nothing new in the world. So with that, I'll hand over to Stephen to lead us through this presentation, and then hopefully there'll be time for Q&A at the end. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you. I started off by saying I actually wanted to write a paper, and then I thought, okay, it's Actuary Summit, how am I going to get a lot of people in the room? So I thought, okay, let's put super life and GI in the topic, and we'll hopefully get a few people in the room. Can I just get a show of hands who works in life insurance here? Okay, good, because I was a bit worried. It was classified under GI. I thought I'd get a lot of GI people. Look, I'll explain the reason for the heading a bit later, but broadly speaking, I have been doing a lot of work in the life insurance space, more specifically in the disability insurance group life space. And the reason why we've been asked to help out is some of the issues cross the borders of life, super, and GI. So perfect opportunity to share some knowledge. And that's entirely what I'm intending to do today. I'm just going to throw a few ideas out there. It's a tough problem what's happening in the group life space right now. A lot of issues. I'm going to try to tackle some of them, but really I'm not going to land on any solution. I'm going to throw some ideas out there, and then I'll leave my life insurance colleagues to do what they will with it. So Jeff probably won't say too much, but I'm sure he'll heckle, and I want him to heckle and offer his thoughts when he thinks it's needed. All right. So for those who don't know, Jeff also helped out with the Murray Financial Systems Inquiry. So if you have any, so he's been spending a lot of time thinking about broader sustainability issues. So if you've got any questions about that, you can ask him at the end. Jeff, you're laughing? Yep, okay. Well, you were there. All right. Great. Okay, so just a brief agenda. I want to quickly go over what's happening in the life space. I don't want to bore you. I know that's a well-trodden road now. I want to spend a bit more time on just discussing the key issues that I see facing the TPD space. I'll explain to you why I've chosen the heading as we have. And then I'm going to throw out some general insurance experiences that may have applications here. No surprises, mostly in the accident comp space. And then finally, I'm going to throw out lots of random ideas and say this might be an opportunity to redesign your product, and here are some thoughts that you might be interested in. Okay, so high-level summary. Group life market worth around $3.2 billion per annum, and over three-year period between 2010-2012. Oops, there we go. That's from APRA, you'll probably all recognise it. over that three-year period, the industry reported total profits of around $400 million. So that's around a 4% profit margin on $3.2 billion. So since then, you've got this big dip there, and that totals $500 million. So if you just sum up the area there. So more than wiped out the last 3 years worth of profits. A lot of that is reserve strengthening, as you know, and it's the recognition of TPD claims trends, whether it's earlier reporting or whether it's a worsening trend, who knows, but it's recognition of that. And then obviously the actuaries making their adjustments and quite large losses there. I've got a red flag. Okay, so that's a bit of a red flag. Some of the issues that were cited for that are product awareness, increased legal representation, rise of mental health claims, this issue about automatic acceptance of claims, even for fairly high coverage limits. Someone just being able to change, who couldn't get insurance elsewhere, just changing to a super fund that had the default benefit. And of course, there's also toughening workers' compensation regimes and kicking people off benefits there. You're left with the TPD and the income protection. I would say that there's probably still some uncertainty about the ultimate level of those losses. I don't know. I don't work in this space, but you know, if you look at the triangle of claims, if you project the triangle out, there's still a lot of uncertainty there. So whether that tick up in profitability at the end is real or not really does depend on that reserving adequacy. Okay, so what have insurers done? They've increased premiums by a lot. So 22% industry premium increase. So that $3.2 billion went to $3.9 billion in 2014. Some insurers totally left the market. I'll just go back to that 22. Obviously, that's an average number, so some were much larger than 22% and some were less. Some insurers, reinsurers, withdrew all the capital from the market, and the benefits were reduced. So if you take all that together, it's not surprising that the profitability has improved. You've taken the hit, and we've increased premiums a lot. We're probably expecting that their experience is better now. But I think it's, in my opinion, that we're not at an equilibrium stage. And the reason why I say that is because coverage is now a lot more expensive. Benefits have reduced. And it's not entirely clear, to me at least, what consumer need that TPD is actually trying to satisfy here. So you know, the whole lump sum, does that mean a need issue? And then there's still the issue of legal intervention and dealing with that and the increased claims costs that come with that, the claims management costs, while maintaining very equitable outcomes. So that's my high level of what happened. In the next couple of slides, I'm just going to delve into those issues a bit more. The first thing is this definition of TPD issue. I don't have to tell you guys that the definition of TPD is generally unable to work as a result of injury or illness or up to a period of 6 months, for a period of 6 months, and unable to resume work in any other occupation. I think that's unclear, and I think the complaints that the Superannuation Claims Tribunal have seen have reflected that. So what you see there is a chart of total complaints received by the SCT. The dark purple is your disability-related complaints, and that's doubled. Overall complaints have halved. And if you break that down a bit further, the disability complaints, almost half of that is in relation to industry funds. You can't really break that down to the cause of the complaint, but if you put one and two together, I'm going to put it out there that I think definition's a major cause of that. I'm just trying to be really dramatic there by putting a red stamp that it's doubled. okay. Definitional dispute, more evidence of that happening. That's a list of judgments from superior courts in Australia that we were able to find in relation to TPD. All of those actually were relating to the definition of a TPD claim. I think if you scan your eye down that, there you'd recognise a few. I'm not sure whether it's just our limited analysis, but there seems to be a big spike in 2013-14. So all those cases are 2013-14 cases. And before that, we couldn't find too much until you get back to around 2008, 2006, where there's a whole some more cases going through the superior courts. So that suggests that there's TPD definitional issues. And then you incorporate that with this whole corporatization of law firms at the moment. So we've got firms such as Slater and Gordon, Maurice Blackburn, Shine, which specialize. They only do compensation law. So that's a screenshot of the Maurice Blackburn website. I don't mean to pick them out, but it's just nice to see. I mean, that's their list of services. And you've got compensation law, and then you've got general law, which is still compensation because you've got class actions there and wills and disputes. And then you've got really prominently there superannuation and insurance. And I'm not sure who comes from Sydney here, but if you're from Sydney, if you're driving to the airport, I think there's a billboard that says, have you been unable to work because of illness, or you may have a super claim. And that's a Maurice Blackburn billboard, if I recall correctly. So you've got these specialist law firms, and before you'd go to a generalist law firm who did everything from your conveyancing to your wills, but now they're specialised, so they're good at what they're doing. They're really good at getting the a bit controversial here, maximum benefit for minimal cost. And on top of that, what they're going to have is a database of their clients. So if you've claimed a CTP claim, yep, great. Once you get your benefit there, you can go and try it on for superannuation and get your TPD claim or your income protection claim. And you have a whole list of civil liability cases as well that go through the same mechanism. So they're getting really good at this, I would say. You can buy shares in them. They are publicly listed. So, which brings me on to my next point. Are you looking up, Jeff, because you want to say something? Or no? Okay. It brings me to my next point. These companies are ASX listed. So all of a sudden you've gone from a professional services firm that's doing law to a body that now has to report to shareholders as well. So that's going to have some kind of effect. And this is what I've shown here is Slater and Gordon's advertising expenditure since they, I believe, listed in 2016. So it's grown from amount of a bit less than around $1 million, and now they're spending $30 million each year on advertising. And I don't think that comes as a surprise to everyone because you will actually see the ads on TV. They're pretty polished outfit. I'm not trying to stand up here and say to you that legal intervention is necessarily a bad thing. I think it's clear that you've got to recognise that there's a shifting of the landscape. There are more legally represented claims, but at a minimum, what this does is it increases the cost of managing the claims for you. And also, at the same time, it does erode the benefit that ultimately gets paid from the paid to the claimant, because they've got these no-win, no-fee arrangements and what have you. In addition to that, because it's quite adversarial, what you don't get is access to your claimant sometimes. So if you're trying to push out rehabilitation efforts, then that actually might stand in a barrier as well. I like that chart. It's really dramatic. I had Shine on there as well. It's a bit more flat, so I took it off.
Jeff, go on.
All right. Workers' comp, we've mentioned this already. So changes in 2012 to workers' comp, at least in New South Wales. The main change there was it made it extremely hard for anyone who anyone to stay on benefits after 5 years. So basically they have this whole person impairment measure and a work capacity assessment, and if you don't meet 30% whole person impairment, you don't get any benefits after 5 years and you're gone. So of course you're going to, if you are receiving those benefits, you're going to look for money elsewhere. You've been off work for 5 years already. So no surprise, TPD, income protection, they're the first things you look for. There is a, if I tie back to the definitional issue, there is definitely a inconsistency. Like at the moment, you can be totally, you can be assessed as, yes, you're able to go back to work in workers' compensation because of the various tests, or if they're correct. But you can also get a TPD benefit. So there's probably some mismatch there that needs to be addressed. We'll get onto that a bit later. Rising health claims, mental health claims. So mental health is developing as a social and insurance issue. It is now one of the top three causes of disablement claims in the life industry. And more importantly for you guys is that psychological and cognitive barriers rank as a primary factor preventing return to work. So I have an estimate here of about $160 million paid for TPD income protection per annum in relation to mental health claims. So that's around 5% of your premiums in 2014. And this trend is expected to continue. So obviously an issue that needs to be worked through. The cost will continue to evolve, and I have a question for you guys, whether your current repricing at the moment is actually allowing for that cost in order, or are we still looking backwards rather than looking forward? Another important point about mental health is it does require a different approach to rehabilitation. So if that's an approach you want to take to try to get people back to work, well, if someone's claiming a stress-related claim because they're bullied at the workplace, encouraging return to work is probably not the right thing to do. In the workers' compensation context, here's an example from a colleague of mine that was presented at the Actuaries Injuries Scheme seminar, which compares the median time off work for physical injury, that's in the blue, and mental injury. So you've got acute, which is an injury. That's about half a week off work. Degenerative, about a week off work. And then you get to the mental injuries, and an event-based mental injury, which is something like a post-traumatic stress disorder, if your shop is robbed or something like that. They take around 10 times more time off work. So they're around three weeks, or maybe that's not right, five times. And then there's perception-based, so things like depression, they're up around 9 weeks off work. And again, I'll come back to this point. If you're trying to get people back to work, then 9 weeks off work is a long time, and they're starting to lose that relationship with the workplace, so it becomes even harder to get them back to work. I think I have one more point there. The last point I'll make on that is that GPs generally act as a gatekeeper for mental health claims, and studies have shown that GPs are more likely to certify mental health conditions as unfit for work and for longer periods. So that's another thing to be aware of. Cool. All right, so then I get to the exciting part about explaining why we chose the title that we chose, other than to get more people in the room. It's quite clear there are overlaps between the industry. So there are general insurance, there are examples in general insurance and accident compensation that are very useful in considering the current issues. So this could range from very simple things like just understanding how to reserve IBNR better, a concept that's quite close to GI actuaries' hearts, to even just broader issues such as, what do you do in designing a product? And for superannuation, the high premiums are eroding retirement savings. So that's an issue for them too. And there's definitely a benefit in finding a more cost-effective option. Okay, I've said that. Sorry, bear with me 1 second. The other reason for the title is insurance products themselves have evolved over time. So there was a time when life insurance was your death policy and GI didn't touch any death stuff. But now we've got things like consumer credit insurance that pay pay your minimum loan repayments if you're unable to work. So that sounds a little bit like a disability income protection policy to me, but on a smaller scale. We then have TPD and CTP claims that both pay quite a significant amount if someone's unable to work because of a motor accident. Except if you fall ill outside of work, then you've got nothing. So in the next bit, what I want to do is share some of those GI examples with you that might have relevance. I think they do, but you can judge yourself. And then I'm going to start throwing those ideas out. So I apologise in advance that it's a bit random. I'm trying to get a lot of thoughts out there, but I'll try to also bring it back together at the end. Okay. But a bit left field, one of the GI examples I think might be relevant is the liability crisis in 1990s and early 2000s. So what happened there was insurance costs rose quite a bit. This was due to what we call superimposed inflation and a lot of extra claims being reported. And the similarities there is that it was because of a pro-plaintiff court system. And this consequently led to a lot of people filing legal action and winning, and therefore more of the same coming through. And like TPD, there's a very long delay between the accident happening and the claim being reported. So we've got this whole recognition issue as well. So again, insurers were very slow to realise that was happening, and when they realised there was large losses, and you've probably heard the term the death of fun, all those nice things that came along at that time. At the same time, the market was very competitive, so this meant there was actually quite a bit of turnover of policies between insurers. So an insurer's portfolio was always changing. It made it quite hard to monitor the trends in your portfolio because you got a new set of risks each time. Analogy with group life insurance is that this is an area where the quality of data does vary because of different reasons. You've got people shifting insurers in the GI space, but here in the life space, the quality of data does vary between super funds. But I understand that there's steps being taken to actually improve that at the moment. The solution in the GI space was tort reform, so we have the benefit of legislative reform, and that's obviously not an area that's not something that's available to you immediately. But if we focus on some of the reasons why tort reform was successful, maybe that can provide some insight. Most importantly, I think the tort reforms provided a very clear legislated line about what was a claim and what was not a claim. So, for example, the reform said that no liability for harm if it was an obvious risk while you're doing a dangerous recreational activity. So that was a line in the sand. And then there was a clear 15% impairment threshold to satisfy if you were to make a claim in the first place, and caps and limits on how much you can claim. We're about 15 years now, 14 years from tort reform, and they seem to have worked. And I don't think that was at the cost of poorer outcomes for the plaintiffs. I think it was really getting rid of a lot of the claims that probably shouldn't have been claims in the first place. Yes? Yep. That's my opinion. So the takeout here, I think, is that clearer guidelines about when you pay a claim is useful. And I think it probably can apply for TPD. Another initiative was that APRA's National Claims and Policy Database was established. So this, we call it the NCPD. It collected policy and claims information for public liability and professional lines for all APRA-authorised insurers. The NCPD was seen as a necessary measure for proper management of pricing and reserving risk, because you've got this big data set of everyone's experience by what you call event year and development period, so you've got more information to work with. Again, it's probably too early to say whether that's been successful or not, but after 10 years, war's been going okay. No other crises anytime soon, or they haven't been over the last 10 years, so I'm going to say that that's a half-mark tick. But what it has done is it's turned the conversation about monitoring the costs. There's a lot more discussion about superimposed inflation with insurers and monitoring industry trends about claims frequency, and that information is readily available. Again, another question I'm going to pose to you guys is, could you come up with a NCPD look-alike? And would that be useful? Okay. Workers' compensation reforms. So before I talked about the reforms and the impact on TPD claims, what I'm trying to pick out here is what the reforms were and which ones might have relevance here again. So we've got reducing or removing benefits. That was one of the... Each time they reform the workers' compensation schemes, they usually reduce or remove something. And that's great, because it instantly gets rid of your claims costs. Simple to do, immediate benefit. However, I think the general consensus is that Australia has an under-insurance issue. So reducing benefits probably isn't the right solution, because it's only going to make that worse. It also does us out of the job, so let's say no to that one. Which brings us to whole person impairment thresholds. So the whole person impairment thresholds are objective measures of impairment based on the American Medical Association impairment guides. There are limitations about how whole person impairment measures work. I'll go back and give you examples. So if you've got a partial hearing loss, I think that's a 10% whole person impairment. If you lose a limb, a leg, that's around 50% whole person impairment. So it's very objective. It just measures it and puts a percentage on there. One of the limitations with WPI is that it's not intended to be a compensation measure. However, in the workers' comp space, yes?
The AMA guides have said that since 1954.
Okay.
They only exist for one reason: to determine compensation.
Maybe they're covering something, yep. Well, notwithstanding that, how the workers' comp schemes work is that they pair it together with this work capacity assessment. So the WPI is a threshold you meet, and then after that it's a work capacity assessment. It might have some relevance for how much you get, but it's more about making sure that all the small claims don't get in. So perhaps some kind of WPI work capacity assessment could also be relevant for TPD. And the last point I have is on limiting court access. Now, again, workers' compensation is a statutory scheme, so you could just say no common law avenues. But if there was some way we can engage alternate dispute resolution, then this will have benefits on your expenditure on legal costs, your medical fees, and also hopefully leave more money in the pocket for claimants. Good. Early intervention. So this was one of the... Very early on in this issue, early intervention was said to be almost a silver bullet. And we had... I remember at a financial services forum where there were workers' comp speakers who were talking about it and the reduction in claims costs. And that's probably true. But for workers' compensation, the earlier intervention happens from day two, almost. And typically, you won't get... You get an intervention plan 2 to 4 weeks from injury. This is because employers have a legal obligation to report the claim and also a financial incentive through the experience premium to minimise claims cost. A claims manager will then come in, devise an injury management plan, find some way to send you back to work. The workplace has to provide you alternative tasks. So it all works quite well. In the CTP space, the delay is a bit longer, so it's probably 2 to 4 months. Those are guesstimate numbers, but gives you a sense of order of magnitude. But again, there's provisions in the Act to let you pay capped payments on a no-fault basis for medical expenditures. But if we just look at the TPD experience, for TPD, the delay is measured in 6 months, years. You probably wait until you finish your IP before you claim your TPD. So that's 2 years. So that means you can't get to early intervention until 2 years after the injury's already occurred. So if we pull some stats out from the workers' compensation experience, this is from our competitor, so I won't mention their name. Taylor Fry. they said that if you're off work for 20 days, you've got a 70% chance of returning to work. If you're off work 70 days, that halves to 35%. So if you're thinking about putting a rehabilitation program in, you've got to look at those numbers and go, well, can we get in there early enough, and does this justify how much we're going to spend on rehab advisors, physiotherapists, etc.? And if I look at the current TPD policy, at least in its current form, it's hard to see where that incentive comes from reporting early. You do want to get your income protection claim before you get your TPD claim. And I'll finish off of my brain dump here on the GI experience with this concept of independent medical assessments. So this exists in a few places. New South Wales CTP and Victoria WorkSafe has it. But it's an independent medical assessment process that determines your WPI, basically. So the benefit of this is that it's independent, it's a third party, it's not related to the insurer, it's not related to the regulator. And they designate a binding determination of how injured you are. That keeps the courts out of it and hopefully reduces the costs. Now again, how do you guys do it? A bit harder. You don't have a law saying you can do this, you have to do this. But if you could come up with a credible medical assessment panel, maybe an industry-funded one that's arbitrated by the SCT, I don't know. If it's credible and if people know about it, then that's one way we could reduce the lawyer intervention. So at the next point, I'm going to start talking about some rethinking. But if you have any comments or suggestions about what I've just said, just raise your hand and I can take them. Otherwise, I'm just going to go on, move on to the rethinking. Okay. No. All right. So the rethinking. This is a really simple representation of the current compensation schemes, programs that are out there. So at the very basic level, you've got your safety net. You've got government-provided pensions. You've got medical costs provided by Medicare, pharmaceutical benefit scheme, and then ultimately you're going to have support programs if you're very disabled through the NDIS and NIIS. So if you're injured at work, you also get workers' compensation on top of that. So that will pay for income, medicals, and your supports. If you're injured in a motor vehicle accident where you're not the one driving, sorry, this is very New South Wales focus, when you're not, if you're injured in a motor accident, not at fault in New South Wales, you get CTP, it pays for all those things too. If you can prove someone else is negligent, then you've got common law damages, and that's both through medical malpractice and just anywhere else. Where the gap is if you're injured because of your own fault, New South Wales, New South Wales focus, or you can't find a negligent party, or basically all illnesses. So that's where TPD disability insurance comes in. That's what we're trying to ensure. Okay. Where do the claims arise from? Well, most of them actually do arise from illnesses. I've borrowed this from TAL. This is TAL's accepted disability claims from 2007 to 2012. And I've only been able to split it by disease, injury or mental health. So about 15% of claims come from mental health at the moment. 25 come from injury. And of those, that 40%, some of those would be CTP, workers' comp related. But then there's 60% of claims that come from disease and illnesses. So a majority of the claims do come from things where there's no alternate compensation. Guesstimate probably 80%. And then we need to consider what we're trying to insure. Are we... what are we paying for? Are we paying for someone to pay off their home, pay off their kids' education expenses, any kind of household expenditures if we're falling injured? So I'm going to put out there that a flat amount is not good enough. I mean, it's easy to do, but it doesn't actually meet the need. The need is actually the house, the kid, the school, any renovations to your home that you need because of your injury. A fixed benefit is very blunt. So for some people, TPD represents a windfall, and for other people, it's not going to be enough. I mean, that was probably a bit harsh, though, so it's not good enough. It's very hard to actually work out how much you should pay someone. But is there a better way of actually paying directly for those needs rather than a fixed lump sum? And then I get to my favourite slide. The reason why I've thrown up so many ideas is if you're going to come up with a new product, there's so many things you need to consider. So you've got to look at, well, what is the need for insurance? Are there other insurance products that are available right now that already meet that need? So where are the gaps? And then you've got to look at the super system where a lot of the distribution happens, My Super. I haven't touched on legislation at all. I'm just assuming this is all happening in a perfect world, but there are legislative constraints. So CIS Act, Medicare, Insurance Contracts Act, I think the list goes on there, that you've got to work around. And one example that gets thrown out is the CIS regulation that defines a TPD claim. Well, that mirrors the definition I said earlier. Don't know which came first, but that's going to act as a barrier of to any change that we want to put through. And at the end of that, we also need to consider whether the risk is insurable in the first place or how to make that insurable. So are the losses fortuitous? Can we measure with some kind of reliability the frequency and magnitude of these losses? And then is the premium affordable in the first place? So how are we going for time? Good, sorry. Product design. This is, I think, is the key. I think what we want to do is design a product that meets needs. So can we, and this is all questions, can we tailor coverage to suit those house, family, car, renovation needs? Can we pay for retraining, get people back into work rather than TPD? And can we offset against other benefits where there is duplication of insurance? So can we offset against workers' compensation lump sums if they were paid? Probably yes. You already do something like that for income protection. And then how do we get people to report a claim earlier? This is Jeff's idea, so I'm going to blame him, but it could work. He suggested, can we make it a claims-made policy? So move away from this whole event-based, event period-based product to something that's claims-made. Now, I know there's complications in doing that because by the time you make a claim, you've already been injured and the insurer might know that you've already been injured before you make a claim and maybe not offer you insurance. So maybe there are issues there. But at the same time, if we can get around that actually might make people report claims early in the first place.
I spent most of the last session scribbling about how a claims made might work, and it's worth thinking about. Apart from the fact that you get this one-off premium reduction because you don't have all the retroactive coverage, and you can bank some of that and create a kind of buffer profit share with the fund, so that when future premiums, if future premiums need to go up, you've got a little bit of a buffer.
Good. So thinking's been done. Good. Can we offer an incentive for early reporting? So I'm not necessarily thinking, you know, give $5,000 if you report early, but what if you can meet bills, you know, pay $500 for bills if you are injured and you know about the claim quite early, as long as people know about that benefit on your policy. I don't know. You sum up the costs and you work out what the expected reduction on your TPD claims is. I think the math is, you know, not too hard to do. And again, another pie in the sky one is, can we link life insurance and health insurance? Because a health insurer at least knows about a claim a couple months earlier when you're trying to do surgery. Would that help? And then also, to reduce the definitional disputes, I think we want to go back to something, you know, we learn from the workers' compensation experience, learn from you know, having those objective measures, the work capacity assessments. They've got their faults, but at least they're replicable and they draw a bit of a line in the sand. Sorry, is that my 5 minutes? Okay. Sorry, okay, I won't go through the last two because I personally feel the product design issues are the main ones, but I've got some ideas about how you can do the pricing better, it's all in the paper, some claims management ideas. I went on for too long, and I'll leave you with my key messages, which is for disability insurance to be sustainable, changes are needed. Default lump sum insurance doesn't meet people's needs, and returning to work is good for everyone. Thank you.
Now, thanks. Thanks, Stephen and Jeff. And look, I know you were keen to get some questions and feedback from the audience. That was just the warning bell. But if we can be quite focused in our questions, I think it's always a great thing where different parts of the profession in practicing in different areas can work together on a problem. Now, I know, Francis, you had your hand up before. I don't know whether you still have a question or whether there's other questions. Just invite you to use the microphone.
You can address all hard questions.
Yeah, just a very quick question. Are there any insights, sort of a couple of years on into the life insurance issue that got from the workers' conversation in the late 2000s? So how long did it take and how was it solved, and is tort reform the only answer? So can you guess from the past GI experience 10 years ago how much pain?
I spent a bit of time at the FSI thinking about this, and I came to the conclusion that it would need law changes. So that's just my own view about it. How long does the pain last? You're probably at the end of it, because I don't know if any of you heard Danny Shuttleworth and his colleague talking about insurance cycle. It's a pretty much classic situation, and these things definitely become kind of self-correcting through a variety of means. And 3 years, Daniel? 3 years a good cycle for superimposed inflation? Something gets worked out, generally, you know, often a government intervention, but not always. How long have you guys been in?
Thanks, Lindsay. Thanks, that was great. I really think that's a magnificent idea to look at this thing together. And I think we need to really push it a bit further. I mean, if there's a social benefit, I think, the final message, it's much better to get people back to work. And the financial costs are only one part of it, but we know the costs are huge. And, I mean, I think there's a bit, I challenge you, what's the cost of the workers' compensation? What's workers' compensation premiums relative to life premiums? I suspect in terms of the actual cost workers' compensation side is quite a lot higher than on the life side, because there's a fair amount of poor claims management still, and you've got a lot of anti-selection on the side of the people that are covered. But perhaps we should be thinking in terms of legislation that actually allows life insurers to get health data, an education process that looks at rehabilitation, and a way of allowing, getting away with the demarcation issues between health and life and workers' comp, so that one-stop shop for claims. There are all sorts of things that I think could be done in this area. It's great, thank you.
Is there
My name is Paul Francis. I'm here primarily from my interest from the superannuation fund side as a delegate for a trustee looking at lots of claims. And the feeling I've had looking at a lot of disablement claims admitted and those not admitted, seeing virtually the same situations coming up with quite different claim results from the insurers, recognising that the definition is often, in our opinion, unlikely to ever work. I've come to the conclusion that one of the main problems we have is the lump sum nature of TPD benefits. And I guess the what I'm conscious of is what superannuation about is retirement income. And so I guess what I would like to put to people is to say, how do we shift the paradigm? But I think it's been a very useful paper. I would certainly encourage you to broaden the scope of who you talk to about it. But that's a challenge I want to leave with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. I just wanted to make a very brief comment on that. It does trouble me, the erosion of retirement incomes by insurance costs in the superannuation system. And I keep thinking about this idea that won't quite work, which is instead of paying a TPD lump sum, you pay the superannuation contribution for the next 10 years.
Yep, thanks, Scott.
Scott Denzel. I'm going to throw it straight back and say, why do people think it's eroding retirement savings when aren't people retiring? They're just retiring early due to disability or death. You've got to provide a benefit upon retirement. It shouldn't just be about age 65. I've seen trustees look at projections and all they're comparing is the accumulation someone gets at 65 for those who have not claimed. They don't even look at what happens to the person who would have left at 25. Everyone's talking about longevity insurance for people that live too long. Why is it an issue to pay for insurance premiums for those that don't live long enough?
Wish we had a mic. I don't think I'm saying that that's not true. I think what we're trying to say is that you just got to be conscious of what you're actually paying for. Not a fixed lump sum. It's probably linked to the needs. If you're dying early, you probably have a house that you need to pay off, and link it to that rather than say, look, $200,000 will do it.
Yeah, really quickly. Yeah, I don't disagree.
Great.
We just need to get a whole lot more information from members to the super fund. The reason it's so fixed is because they don't know enough about the members. They don't know how many dependents they've got or Great. What mortgage they've got. We just need to use social media a whole lot better to get information from families to the super funds.
And there is that data piece, so yeah. We did talk about the pricing.
Well, look, thanks very much, Stephen and Jeff, for your presentation and to the audience for your questions, and just encourage practitioners in this area to keep talking and working on this issue. Please join me in thanking Stephen and Jeff.